Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Welcome back to another edition of the Small Caps Podcast. I'm Peter Capsanis. It's great to have your company, and it's also great to have the company of Bruce Malewicz, the Managing Director of Emerging Silica and Mining Company, BRX Silica. That's ASX code BRX. Pretty simple, really. Now, the company has a number of project areas north of Perth, mainly around the Arrowsmith and Mouche Silica Sand projects. Bruce, it's been a while since we last caught up on Small Caps, but welcome back.
Thanks, Peter. It's good to catch up again.
Definitely. Now, there's been some exciting news, there's developing news in more recent days in relation to VRX's environmental application around Arrowsmith. We'll get into that shortly, but I just want to give everyone a refresher about the company, VRX, its mission, its purpose, bearing in mind, Bruce, that silica is commonly found in the Earth's crust. 59% rather of the Earth's crust is made up of silica, and we know that silica is used in a whole range of building for building purposes, glass making purposes, ceramics, etc. So, where to from here for VRX?
Peter, you're right. There is an enormous amount of silica sand on the earth, but not much of it is suitable for what we intend to use it for, which is mainly glassmaking. There are desert sands scattered on every continent, but you'll find that ready orange colour is because of the iron content in it. And it's the iron content which is the enemy to making glass, clear glass. So when you start looking at sources of silica sand suitable for making glass, you need to have it eroded from granites. So not coastal dunes. Most of the dunes, the beach that you see, is predominantly calcium carbonate, so it's shell grit and marine type critters. When you start looking at those sort of sources, you start to limit the ability to start exploiting some of these sands. Now, when you talk about these types of sands in Asia, surprisingly, they're running out. And I noticed this in a couple of articles in 2017, when China made silica sand a strategic mineral. So it was in the same bag as uranium and rare earth. And at the time, I wondered why, and delved into it a bit more, and I found out that Asia is running out of sand. Now, the main reason they're running out of sand is concrete. Now, almost all the stimulus spending going on in Asia, and particularly China, is infrastructure, and infrastructure is concrete. It's the main reason why the iron ore price is so high. It's rebar for concrete. So there's such a demand for concrete, they're using up sand that could possibly be beneficiated to the quality you require to make glass. So the glassmakers are losing access to good quality sand. And also the best quality silica sand for glassmaking generally comes from rivers and lakes. It's being dredged from freshwater rivers and lakes, which is unsustainable. And, you know, it's causing downstream environmental issues. So most governments are slowly but surely banning the dredging of freshwater rivers. So that's another supply that has dried up. So we're looking to start filling that that void where the supply is getting tight. Predominantly Asia, predominantly glassmaking. Asia accounts for about 46% of the world's glass manufacturing, and we're looking to feed into that market.
Okay. Well, so you've had some, as I mentioned in my intro, you've had a bit of a development around your environmental application, predominantly around your Mouche Arrowsmith sites, which, as I said, are north of Perth. So what's the latest now? Because I guess there was an expectation of some kind of mining activity on the horizon soon, but are you on target? Are you maintaining that path? And what does this EPA from WA mean for the company and its path forward?
I must admit, we thought we would get through this process a lot quicker than we have. But we just had approved what's called the ESD, the Environmental Scoping Document. And that is a document that sets out the studies that are required by the EPA to assess our project. So it's a description of the project, it's a description of the environment, and a list of studies that are required. Now, it's a very important document for two reasons. One, it has that list, and it is a finite list, and we've been engaged with the EPA for a number of years now. So we are aware of that list and have been for quite some time. Getting it approved has taken a lot longer than we would have anticipated. And quite frankly, the revisions we've had lately are very minor. But we now know which studies are required for the EPA to conduct the assessment. We have conducted those studies. So the next step is, in fact, to lodge the next part, the next stage of the process, which is an environmental review document, which is a summary of all the, it includes all of the studies that we've completed. And I think there's now about 16 different studies that we've completed that will go into that document, which is a little over 800 pages now. But also the approval of the ESD also sets a timetable, which the EPA are now accountable to. Now, we've never had that position with the EPA where they've been accountable for any timing at all. So that's a major step. So we really have a very tight, it's still going to take quite some time, but we've got a very tight schedule that we know that we can comply with, and now it's up to the EPA to complete the process. But there's still something like about 7 or 8 months of assessment. Now, that assessment includes a 30-day public review period where it's our document, our review document, is published on the website, the EPA website, and people get the opportunity to comment on it. Those comments are then dealt with, and we think that with all the studies we've done, we've addressed all the issues that people would raise with regard to this project. Okay. So
when you talk about
we're ready to go for the next step.
Brilliant. So when you talk about issues, you're talking about issues around maybe flora and fauna in those project areas, and any anthropological issues of any sort?
No, we've completed Aboriginal heritage surveys. We've completed 3 flora and vegetation surveys. We've completed 2 fauna surveys, including regional surveys and targeted surveys. There are some priority species of plants, but we're able to address that with our rehabilitation technique that we've been pushing with the EPA. That's on our website. It's unique, but it addresses this type of vegetation very well. The biggest, probably the dominant issue is Carnaby cockatoos. They're regarded as endangered here in Western Australia. We have selected areas that have no roosting or nesting trees in it for Carnaby cockatoos, but there's potential for foraging. But we think we can rehabilitate or restore the particularly the Banksia vegetation, which Carnaby cockatoos forage on. We think we can restore that quite quickly. So, and that'll be a continuous part of the process, but we're very conscious of our obligations to the environment, and this is, it's an important stage at this planning stage to try and address all the issues that may get raised, particularly when it comes to native vegetation clearing.
Bruce, all things being equal, once you satisfy the elements of that ERD, and I do note you said it's another 7 month process which takes you towards the end of the year. What kind of, once, if you to get all the approvals, the EPA approvals, it sounds like it's pretty much the final hurdle from there on. What kind of resource potential are we talking about here at Arrowsmith, which is I guess your premier site? I know you're you're building plants and whatnot, and you've got a few other things bubbling along separate to what you're doing. But in terms of the job creation, the resource generation, the value, the economic value for the state, for the area, what's the potential here going forward? Because it sounds like, you know, there aren't several silica mines around Australia, and this certainly seems to be one that's going to put WA and Australia on the map.
Oh, there's no doubt. I can see over the next few years that there will be a silica sand sector on the ASX. I think we're leading the pack as far as the resource goes. We've got over a billion tonnes, and these projects that we've got will last for over 100 years. And we're looking to try and promote further downstream processing into glass, fiberglass, fiber optic, light globes, neon tubes. You'd be amazed how many glass products are around and how many silica sand products are around. Everything from from your LCDs in your phone to the thin film on the front of your TV. They're all silica products. So we're leading the pack there, no doubt. We expect to export about 2 million tonnes a year from each of our projects. Now, each of the projects produce subtly different products, and it's that subtle difference that determines which market it goes into. So our projects are not competing with each other. Surprisingly, you only move 20 kilometres down the road and it's a different type of sand. It's all been derived from, in this case, the Darling Scarp, which is granite. But as you move up and down the coast, it's a little bit different. Now, ours will go into different markets, ultimately. Now, we've got, Arrowsmith North is not super high grade, but it can go into the flat glass, automobile glass, container glass market, whereas Mouche, that can go into the ultra-clear market. And the ultra-clear market is dominated by solar panels, and that's growing at about 30% per year. So that's a market that we will get into. And we've got quite a bit of interest from overseas glass manufacturers to actually build glass manufacturing here in WA. There is no glass manufacturing in Western Australia. So everything we do here is new and adds jobs. Now, we don't use a huge number of people in the mining and processing of the sand. We're going to end up with between 25 and 35 people, but it's the downstream effects on it is where you'll start employing much greater numbers of people. And it's a new export market. There is WA exports sand at the moment, not in big quantities and certainly not the quantities we're looking at, but WA has an incredible reputation for exporting mineral products. And we've had a terrific reception through Korea, Japan, Taiwan, Malaysia, Philippines. They've all got quite substantial glass manufacturing industries. And of course, there's China. There's no avoiding China. It's a huge dominant force. The top 10 manufacturers of solar panels in the world are all Chinese. So, we've got an enormous amount of interest for the Mouche sand.
Okay, so when you met those countries that you mentioned, those Asian countries predominantly that you just mentioned, I'm assuming, it's not always right to assume, Bruce, but I'm assuming on this occasion that some of those countries, if not all, you're possibly arranging some offtake agreement with them.
Yes, we've been in discussion with about 20 different companies. We recently signed an offtake agreement with a Korean company who wants to import foundry sand. We can produce a very high quality foundry sand out of Arrowsmith North. It's not a huge market, but we can fill that. And Korea has an enormous foundry industry. It's the largest in the world, particularly marine components. But the glass manufacturing industries are really struggling to get good, reliable supply. One of the critical issues is maintaining the same quality sand. You can't adjust glass manufacturing with the other additives they put in there, if you the dominant ingredient is silica sand, if that varies a bit, they don't have the opportunity to adjust it on the run. So they need regular quality. Now, we've completed the construction of a pilot plant where we can do bulk sampling, 2-3 ton at a time, whereas all the prior work had been lab scale, 20-30 kilos. So we can now produce quite large samples that we can send to potential buyers. Now, they've all seen 1 or 5 kilos, and yes, they're very interested, but they want to see a bigger sample. So we're able to do that now, and we're in the process of sending out those large samples. So we expect to sign up offtake agreements, quite a number of them, over the next 3 or 4 months.
Bruce, that's very pleasing and encouraging to hear. And before we do run out of time, I just want to touch on a couple of other areas. You're not just resting on your laurels. The company and yourself, you're continuing to be proactive across a number of areas, particularly in the company's bid to delve into the hydrogen space. But just very quickly, can you just touch on that for me and tell me more about that?
Well, our projects, particularly Mushay and also at Arrowsmith, are in the middle of renewable power central. Everywhere from Lancelin to Kalbarri, there are windmills going up non-stop. There's some solar farms proposed, not many there at the moment, but they will be there. Now, one of the opportunities for renewable power is less so providing power to us than producing hydrogen. Now, 80% of the cost of producing glass is energy. So if we can get clean and green energy out of hydrogen to fire up a glass plant, it's a huge advantage. And, it gets far more credit than we could get with just using LNG. So we are pursuing that really on behalf of potential glass producers. Now, our plant only uses about 5 megawatt of power. We can do that with hydrogen engines. But fortunately, there's a number of European companies have spent an enormous amount on R&D on using hydrogen for producing glass. So we're talking to a couple of those companies, and we'd love to entice them here to WA and use hydrogen to produce close to green glass.
Okay, so it's green, as you say, it's economical, it adds another burgeoning industry to the WA market. Probably final question, Bruce, have you discussed the opportunity with the state government, and what's been its reaction? You say that your resource will effectively almost force a local glass manufacturing industry. What's been the reaction by government in relation to that?
Very positive. The biggest issue we have is that the production of sand and sand mining and processing is not there's not a huge number of people involved, and it's not a huge investment. But glass making is a much, much bigger investment. So we're talking to companies about putting glass making here in WA, and combined we can approach the state government, and I think we'll get another level of support with a big investment. Glass manufacturing is $600-700 up to over $1 billion investment, which is why they need very long-term projects like we have, because it's a significantly more, significantly higher investment to start manufacturing glass than it is to mine and export sand. But we're moving closer to that. The state government is well aware that we're talking to companies. So I can see us getting a lot more support in the near future.
Well, Bruce, sounds like things are progressing in the positive for VRX, and hopefully we'll be able to speak again sooner rather than later, talk again all things about VRX and silica, the potential glass manufacturing here in WA. We will watch with quite a bit of interest the hydrogen aspect of the macro part of the business. That's obviously will keep a lot of people interested and happy as well, given it's clean and green. Bruce Maliwish from VRX, thanks for joining us on the Small Caps today, and we hope to catch up soon.
Thanks, Peter. I think we will be catching up soon. We've got a fair bit of news coming out in the next few months.